For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable. That's right. For the record, you ain't trying to grow, then it's done for you. That's right. For the record, lab on me going all the way. All the way. For the record, ain't trying to link, no time to waste. Stop calling. For the record, 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 for the record. For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable. That's
right. Welcome to the Mount Woodgie Studios here today in Currumbin. Wow, I have a guest that I've wanted to have on the show for so long now. He's an original Redfern boy. He grew up in the time when racism was at its worst. It was the block. It was known as a notorious street, Everly Street. His name is Jeff Morgan, and he is one of the most inspirational Indigenous men that I have ever met. And today, I am absolutely privileged to sit down and chat with him. Jeff Morgan, Morgs, welcome to the Clink, Stories of Redemption.
Legend, mate. Thanks for having me. And I'm looking forward to a good chat to hopefully inspire, motivate, and empower others to believe in themselves. And no matter how deep they are in their own journey, knowing, you know, at the end of this, hopefully the story behind myself will allow them to believe they can achieve anything that they want in their life.
Let's go back and explain them what it was like for a young Indigenous man who'd run away from home, from one parent, ended up on the block. And Everly Street was notorious. Everly Street was just a stronghold for Indigenous. It was rough. It was hard, mate.
Yeah, like you got to think about, is one of the most notorious streets in Australia's history if you look back on it. And the normal behaviour, habits and rituals of the community at that point in time was very destructive. A lot of crime, a lot of drugs, alcohol, destructive behaviour, I suppose, where people wouldn't drive down there. Taxis wouldn't drop you off, wouldn't even go into the area, you know, let alone the street itself. Then you had the local police who wouldn't even drive down the street, because if they did, they would get bricked, and it was just insane. And then if they got bricked, they'd jump out and run up the street and leave the car, and the community would burn it. It was just absolute mayhem. But that became so entrenched as normal behaviour that people growing up there just took on and became a byproduct of the environment. And I think one of the most important things it taught me is that I was able to then transition that, and how we could then pass on to younger kids growing up to make the right decisions and, you know, have good role models like myself, where I'm at currently now versus where I used to be, and allowed them then to make better choices in their life before they have to go through what I did.
And I'll say it, it's a privilege, because I grew up around the city and around your era, we've shared coeys, we know a lot of the same people, and walked a very similar journey in a lot of ways. Jeff, you were known through all circles as one of the best high-end prestige vehicle thieves, if I can put it that way. You were an amazing athletic man that just could never get fucking caught. you would leap and bound like Superman. You then moved on to some big things. Take us through that journey of Jeff Morgan, you know, the young bloke from the block that all of a sudden is then, you know, getting chased across the Harbour Bridge in a Porsche and, becomes a bank robber.
I think one of the biggest things for me was, as I said, I became a product of that environment. So seeing what or how to survive was probably the best way of putting it. I then adapted to that environment, and I learned to be the best I could be around what I knew that I actually thought was totally normal. It was insane to think back on it and look back at who I used to be versus who I am now. I look back and I often can't believe what I actually did. And let me clarify before, and anyone that does watch this, who I used to be and who I am now is two totally different people. Now that I know better, I know that what my actions back then obviously had a huge impact on people, the community, and everybody else around me. I think it's a huge lesson for us as Australians to be able to impact one another and help those going through that, because monkey see, monkey do, and the kids that grow up having no role models, as an example, will only model themselves on the environment they're in. And then if you put them into a custodial sentence, whether it's boys' homes or jails, that will only elevate them to a whole new level around their knowledge and experience. And for me, I always had that drive. My father was a very driven man and really pushed me really hard as a kid to be all I could be around sport, I suppose, on that end, and life as well. And that meant that I had those skills, but then obviously I was using them in an environment where it was having a negative impact on the community and very destructive impact on my own self, mental health / community and everyone else around me. It wasn't until I was starting to get older and mature that I started to realize, hey, I need to change myself. But by that stage, I'd already had these entrenched behaviors, habits, and rituals around, you know, negative choices in life. And once you, it's easy to say, hey, get out of that. It's like this. I'm now helping people lose weight, as an example, one component of our business. And I think with that, people say, hey, I want to lose weight. A week later, they're back eating the foods that they were originally, and they fall off the wagon.
Whoa, whoa, I'm that guy.
We give up on kids, especially for me. I look back on it now, and I don't know if I'm angry. I don't know if what I feel. I feel something that I feel that we, as a community, as Australians, should reach out and grab these young kids that are going through a struggle and not just give up on them after their first attempt. Because some of them, including myself, were trying to change, and I was constantly reaching out, trying to find role models. Now, Jeff Fenwick, as an example, came and spoke to us at one point in time. And, when he left, I was like, that's it, I'm going to be the next, world boxing champion. So for me, I didn't know what steps I needed to take after he left. And then it became too hard for myself and went back to what I knew. And I think that's one of the most important things. These kids, some of them do want to change. And having Jeff Fenwick come in and chat to myself, I think, not saying that he should have then grabbed me and take taking me on board or under his wing and then mentored me, but in general, if I had the steps after that, maybe I would have went out and actually boxed, and that became a discipline that was on the back end of my life that allowed me to make better choices in my life and be more disciplined around better structure, which means that maybe my life would have been a more positive one as a child. And I think we shouldn't just give up on these young kids who do want to change. They just need the right role models. And by having something in place where we accept that they're not going to make it the first time and understand that they're going to constantly be trying to evolve as a person, similar to those trying to lose weight. 1 week later, they've back eating the same foods that they did prior to contacting myself. Then we have more potential of more kids, or even adults, being successful in their transition from a life where that's all they know, or that's all they knew up, grew up knowing, versus being able to educate them and empower and support them as a community to make better choices in the future. And I think some of those people I met over the years would be the greatest business people you'd ever meet, because of the amount of energy, time, and grind that they put into obviously the wrong things over here. They transition and use the same skill set, but in the business world, they'd be really good at what they actually do. Look at someone like the Wolf of Wall Street, although he made the wrong decisions, he obviously had that drive and energy, plus that no fear factor, which a lot of people on the wrong side do have if they use that skill set, as I said, in the right world around not having a negative impact on a community, then the world will be a better place. And I think that's an important takeaway from the message I'm trying to pass on out of that.
With what you just said, and I want to continue just relating back to your young years, because there's so much to talk about after that. And I think it's really important for people to understand how real your past was. And I always say this, I am where I am today because of the path that I've walked. Now, you talk about the success of people transferring their energies, i.e., some of the lads that and people that you work with that are putting, that hard work and that grind into the crime that they do, or, you know, making an earn and all that sort of stuff. And as we talked about earlier, you know, there's no 9 to 5. They'll go from sun up to sundown or vice versa. And at the end of the day, they don't come home until they've got, you know, an earn in their pocket. And I know that you don't like to go back to that far, but can you take us through a couple of those experiences, you know, what it was like, you know, in a high-speed chase or, you know, that moment that you sort of went into, you know, the bank and then, bang, you're pinched. You're in jail.
Yeah. I think my father had a huge impact on – I definitely know he had a huge impact on my life. My father was German-Austrian, and the skills that he instilled in myself as a young kid, I then carried through life. So I always wanted to succeed, and if I did something, I wanted to do it really, really well. It was the reason why I ran away from home, because he's so strict in my mindset at a young age versus those that were in the area. And that then transitioned into everything that I did. Once I stepped outside the house, ran away from home, and then ended up with my mum down at Everly Street, I think that skill set just came to its fore by being in an environment where it could thrive, but in the wrong way. And I did some big time, obviously, over some of the bank robberies.
How many years did you do in total, Jeff?
I'd say about 15 years in total.
15 years of your life. Yep.
15 years that I, just off the top of my head, and there's remands and so forth as well. So I don't know how much of my life I learned lessons from. And that's how I look at it now. Instead of saying, look, I made mistakes, I learned lessons as a young kid. I think when I started getting into trouble at 12, 13 years of age, you look at a 12 or 13-year-old kid on the streets, and that's where it doesn't click with myself around how we don't have a system that can help these young kids. And I think the best help is those similar to myself who have been through stuff that could go back in and have a huge impact by talking to these kids and saying, hey, there's better choices in your life that you could be making.
Yep.
And we're here. And having a mentor, whether it's yourself, knowing that the character we built from the actions that we took as a young kid can now be used as a strength to help others make better choices and not impact their communities, because no doubt over the years there's been people on a psychological, physical level, mental level that have been impacted for the rest of their life. And, you know, here's a little message. I was asked this before, what would you do or say to those that you've impacted? If anybody ever watches this and knows that I was the end of a crime that they were, that I was convicted of, reach out and contact me. I'd love to help you deal with anything that I might have passed on to yourself. And I think that's in itself what I say about, you know, the government with these young kids.
It shows the sort of man you are. I also have seen another interview that you did, and in that interview, I don't know if I've ever met anybody with more of a genuine want to apologise to any victims of your crimes or people that you had an impact on. And I really want to speak about this because I think it's very powerful, because one, it shows you as a human have accepted your wrongs or your learning curves.
If you're genuine in your approach to change and you were this person and you are now this person, the same principles apply. How do you change your language to change your outcome? And for me, that meant that I had to recognize who I was, all the actions that I took, and went in and said, hey, I need to delete that software that's currently installed in my brain, and I need to rewire myself. And what does that currently look like? So I then started to go out and source out role models that showed me particular different things. And the funniest thing was Jeff Fennig was one of those people who I end up crossing paths with, and I end up training his wife and daughters, and like full circle just in that little story alone, let alone so many different full circle stories that I've come back to. And then to be able to talk to Jeff Fennig in his own house about what he did, how he did it, what his mindset was like, and to be able to sponge that up and then use those same strategies, tools, mindset tips that he used to be a world champion, and then apply that into my own life based around what I wanted that to look like. Because I had a clear vision once I started to transition out of this life into this one, the direction I was heading, what was my vision, purpose, and why. And I wrote that out, and I wrote out steps that I needed to take.
Can you just tell me, though, what stage did you decide this? Because you were doing, you know, a massive sentence for a bank robbery.
Yeah.
We've sort of missed a gap there. I'd like to know, at what stage did you decide to educate and want to change your life? I think that's really valuable to where you are.
I think by the time I was 18, I'd say, I really started to... I was doing courses whilst I was in custody, whether it was computers, business studies, MYOB, whatever it was around what I like to do. And that's a tip I give to everybody. Follow your passion, follow your own happiness. What do you like doing? A lot of the times people follow a pay packet, but it's not their passion. And some days they're dragging themselves out of bed, having 10 cups of coffee to make sure that they actually then head in the direction that they want to head to get their pay packet rather than follow their passion. Not wake up and, you know, feel like you've worked one day in life, and that's what I do. And for me, I think that's a very important principle that people can take on. Going back to the question, sorry, I lost it for a second.
That's all right. I know that in your course of incarceration, you decided to do a degree.
Yeah, and
what part of your life was that, and what made you? I mean, obviously, you're far from a silly man. You're an extremely intelligent man, and you love learning. I can tell that just by what you just said. You know, you love to feed your brain, which is very powerful. When did you make that solemn choice to just say, right, I'm going to enroll in a university degree, and this is my future right now?
Absolutely. 2003, we were arrested in Melbourne for a bank robbery. On Friday the 13th, great date.
I do know the story, so I won't go into it. But what a shit situation!
I think the biggest thing about all of that in 2003. By then, I'd made a lot of choices in the background every time I was in custody to better myself. And I was making those choices myself. A lot of the times, those courses were at the base level, meaning you couldn't really upskill yourself. Mm. I think once I got to Melbourne, we were arrested down there. I then went to court. I fought the actual bank robbery, via trial. During that trial, I was then put into a mobile phone, was found in my cell whilst I was at court. And I was put into segregation for, I think, about 6 weeks. I think it was something of that nature to start with. Mm. And that whole 6 weeks was without TV. It was on the back end of my trial. I'd already done a lot of courses behind myself. And I just felt that now was make or break. You know, I literally sat there and we went out to the yard, and it was just, you go out by yourself. Yep. And it was just pretty much bars on top of myself, and I could see the sun through the bars, and I was thinking, you know, is this the life that you want to keep living, or do you want to change something? You know, because you've got the skill sets to do it and you can use that energy elsewhere, you know.
And this is still while you're on remand, isn't it? So your mindset is quite amazing, because here you are in Segro on remand. You know that if this goes wrong, the trial doesn't come out your way, there's massive figures ahead of you, and it was no silly business. You were looking at a big whack. But yet in your mind, you were already planning your path to a better future. Mm-hmm. I think that in itself is an extremely powerful mindset and a driver and want to achieve right there.
Absolutely. I think by then too, I lost my mother, who was a huge inspiration to myself, as much as I lived in Everly Street with my mother. At the same time, losing my mum, and thinking to myself, you know, there's how much of life is left, and what do you want to actually do with it, mate? Because you can keep coming back here. And yes, I had a great name in that world at that time, but to me, life was more important. And I think for me, I started to realize at that point. And by the time I'd finished my cigarette, I walked out of there, and I never forget, there was a bloke that introduced himself. He said, you look like a smart young man. And I was like, oh, I do my best. And he said, would you like to do a uni degree? And I was like, in here? And he's like, yeah, you could do it here. And I was like, what do you got to offer? And I just think it all fell into place at the time. And then whilst I was in custody, I started that through Deakin Uni. And then come in contact with someone, I won't mention the name, who had made a wrong decision, lived a normal life and misappropriated some funds. But he had this, he grew up the normal way. He just took some money out, invested into something, put the money back into the bank. And he was able to then refine myself, the way I spoke. I was talking pig Latin and swearing quite a lot.
That was how we grew up, but wasn't it, mate? That was just was our communication.
And it was just totally normal. And we didn't think nothing of that. But he then started to say, hey, if you really want to change your life and you're doing this uni degree, my advice to you is you need to change X, Y, and Z. And each and every day we were in there for that. We were doing the same time over that same period, which was a 7-year sentence. On.
So you were found guilty, were you, Jeff?
Yeah, I was found guilty in the end.
And you were sentenced to how long? What was your top and bottom?
10 years, I think it was. I can't even remember. I think I was pretty sure it was 10 years.
It was double.
7 on the bottom. Yeah. 10 years on the bottom, which means for those that don't know, I had to serve 7 years no matter what.
That's right.
And I wasn't getting out any early. If I played up, then I would have ended up doing 10 years.
Yep.
Obviously, doing a uni degree and having that bloke around myself, and I say that bloke because I don't want to mention his name.
No, that's all right.
He's now a professor at a university. He helped me refine everything and say, hey, you need, if you're really serious about a change, do you want to listen to myself and I'll help you as much as I can? Because he felt he could see that I wanted to change and my actions were showing him that I also was serious about what the direction I was heading. So we'd have these conversations and I never forget, I was still, you know, a bit of pig Latin, a bit of swearing. And one day he walked across the yard and this bloke had never been in trouble before in his life and he sung out, SJ, brother! And Latin, right? And I look at him and everyone looked at him. You know, he was straight at 180. So they've gone, like, they've opened their jaw. And I was like, no, don't do that ever again. And then he did that. And I was like, no, I don't. And he goes, because that's you when you talk about going into corporate or doing health and wellbeing programs, right, let's say with government organizations, yet you're still talking that pig Latin. And it really clicked with me. So he had a great way of being able to bring something out and teach me. And I then took that on board. And for me, it was always about showing people the benefit and value towards themselves around the change that they wanted in their life. So weight loss being the example, why is it important to you? And we dig deep into that. And then we unpack the trauma behind it. So he, same thing, I was able to then add a layer to that and say, hey, what do you need to change? Now you've got to accept that you've got to get out of the community that you've grown up in and you love. You don't have to give up your culture or who you are as an Aboriginal person, but you do need to, mother being Aboriginal, but living in that Aboriginal community. But if you want to change, you need to change something because if nothing changes, nothing changes. And from that point in time, every decision I was making, I'd sit, pause and say, is it a positive or negative based around the direction that I want to head? And if it was a negative, I'd pull out of it. If someone said, hey, when you come home, you want to make a heap of money really quickly so you can set yourself up, I'd look at it as a positive, a false positive, meaning it sounded great, but it also could lead me to another 10-year sentence. And for me, that was an easy fix at that point in time. A little thing for anyone that does watch this, that's trying to change their life, who's been through a lot of trouble and has instilled habits and rituals. One of the biggest things I used as well was you make $50 a week as an example if you're at the highest end of the jail environment as a worker. And I think one of the things I was able to do is recognize if I had $60 in my pocket, a roof over my head, some food, a car, a job to go to or something following my passion, I'd rather be home in that environment and have $60 in my account being told what to do in an environment that was just impacting my mental health in a negative way. And that was a huge way I changed myself. And hopefully that same little tip for anyone watching this can help them change and head in a better, more positive direction, following their own dreams and goals around whatever their passion is, you know, whether it's cars, And that's, yeah, same advice I've said before. If you like, and I don't mean this in a negative way, if someone is doing the wrong thing around stealing cars or doing something of that nature, why not open a car type business that you're passionate about, obviously, and then really do something great around it, whether it's, you know, details on cars, whether it's paint jobs on cars or whatever it may be, and be the best at it, and watch your business go to a whole new level and your life elevate to a whole new level without having to worry about the police kicking in your door.
I'm blown away. I really am. You know, like I'm sitting here as someone who's having a yarn with a great man, and I'm taking in everything that you're saying, and I can relate. You know, in my own mind, I think, you know, I've wasted, just in what you just said that, you know, I wasted a lot of years and opportunities because I had those, I guess, opportunities to do back then what you would have done is education. I had the years in jail to do it. I chose not to. And yet I know the path I've walked and what intelligence I've had to have to survive to where I am. How did you actually do that and successfully be able to step away from a life of crime?
I think before I go into that, just quickly, you said you wasted your time. One of the biggest things I say to everybody is change your language or change your outcome. And if you look at, you know, and I'll give you a quick example on that and then I'll get back to your question. Sure. If you wake up in the morning, most people see a grey sky, it's drizzling outside, and they say, oh, what a terrible day, oh, I've got to get to work. Now, if we wake up every morning and we were to walk outside and say, you know what, how grateful am I to be alive, to be able to see the beautiful rain that's pouring down and hear that rain reminding me how beautiful life is. And all of a sudden you change what you actually plant or implant into your brain. And that software I spoke about before allows you to then change the perception or reality of being something harsh to something positive. And I think that's the most important thing for yourself. Look at the lessons that you learn that you can grasp, sponge, and then transition into a positive moving forward for the future. And I think once you do that, then you'll be able to change how you view things. And when you change the way you view things, the things you view start to change. And I think that's one of the most important little tips I can pass on to anybody watching this. You can change yourself. If I can do it, anybody can do it, no matter how harsh your life has been and what you've been through, because I had a lot of trauma there. I think you have to accept that, or hit a point, a trigger point for me, a bit of pain. And I just went, you know, I started to do the maths and think, look, my next sentence will be a long one. You have enough to change yourself. The hardest thing I think over a period of time was the habits and rituals that were well and truly implanted in my brain.
Yeah.
That became a normal way of life. And until I was able to then identify that by
writing scared? Down what Were you I'm, scared, but Jeff, to walk away from that? Did you feel that once you did, you'd lose your identity?
You hit the nail on the head. You look back on it and, the choices we made around it all were just dictated by who we grew up to be.
Even now, my harshest times and moments, there's always that little thought in the back of my mind, oh, I could, or yeah, what if? But then I go the reality of it and go, it's not worth it. No, I won't. But because of that so much, you know, I'm 44 years of age, you know, my whole, 35 years of my life was that way. You know, and it's like fight or flight. I get into that stage where I think, fuck, how am I going to do this? Or, you know, who's going to fix that? How are my kids? It's a panic and a mindset. And instantly you start to go, oh, well, but no. You know what I mean? Mm. To
absolutely
be that person and completely go, right, I'm shedding this skin, I'm washing myself completely clean, and I'm going to reinvent who I am. That's a massive step, Jeff.
And to understand that, like, it's like saying I was an NRL star in Australia, NFL star in America, whatever, NBA player. And then I all of a sudden said, you know what, I'm going to, let's say I was an NBA player. And all of a sudden I said, that's it, I'm going to NFL and I'm going to, or, you know, major league soccer and play for Barcelona. It was a huge transition. So I was at the top of my game in the wrong field.
Yeah.
And then be able to throw that away. And you've got to understand, when you step away from the world like that, it's not only about then changing your life, but people then start to say, oh, maybe this, maybe that. And you have to change how you think about what they're saying about yourself. And whether you, you know, in the old days, it'd be like, yeah, you want to talk about me? Oh, well, let's do something about it. And I'll sort it out myself. And I think to be able to drop your ego was the biggest thing I did. I live in more my happiness than my ego. Whereas that world was full of, you know, obviously I had a persona, an image to continue to portray. And I had to accept that. I didn't care what anyone said, and I didn't care what anyone thought. And moving out of my community, I did a video on this before. It's more the fact that I wanted to then change my life. And they didn't realize at the time the choices I was making would then inspire them in the future. And you know, the amount of lives that it saved, changed, the destructive behaviors that it stopped, and maybe had an impact on, you know, a member of the community where something bad had happened to them, whether it was on a physical or a psychological level. And that was a hard transition, because it's yeah, you know that you're going to make a lot of money over here. You've just mentioned it. And it, you know,
that's what I mean. Like the habits of knowing that you're doing it rock, mate. Like, I mean, you don't do it any more rock than what we've done sitting in Segro and looking at years. I mean, that's as bad as it gets. But and when you're on the street and you know, you're literally going, fuck, you know, what am I going to, I've got to eat, I've got to pay me rent. You know, you're not really earning a lot of money because you're legit. How do you drop that habit for those that are listening that, you know, might be at the moment in that stage in their life where they feel that they've got to go out and earn every time that something goes wrong, or, you know, it's the quickest and easiest way. I mean, we've had to learn the hard way that it ain't. But those habits of, man, they're hard to drop.
Short-term pleasure for long-term gain. And what that means is, you know, we look at it and we think it's all great and we might make X amount of money really quickly, but we have to then look at the consequences. And I not only looked at the consequences of the jail sentence that I would end up with, but also the impact I was having on people in the community, and then starting to relay that to, you know, it could be my mother, my grandmother, my father, my grandfather.
What gave you conscience? What made you become conscious of those that, you know, because I mean, it's something that you just don't think about when you're committing crimes. I mean, obviously, you know, depending on the scale of crime, there's some twisted people out there, but you know, you're looking at an urn or a ram raid or a bank or, you know, stealing a Porsche. It's, you don't look at it as I'm hurting somebody. You look at it as if I'm just, it can be replaced. It's insured. It's a shop. It's got money. Like, you know what I mean? Like, how do you?
You justify it, I suppose, by saying you're in survival mode. And I think that, like, looking back on it, I justified it that way.
Yeah.
And I honestly didn't know any. Like, it was so ingrained in my head that when I changed and when I finally look back on how I changed and everything of that nature, I always thought to myself that I just honestly didn't think I was doing anything wrong. And it sounds crazy and people go, that's bullshit. But you become so entrenched in that behavior. And same, look, you see a kid on the street acting up, playing rap music, singing around like Tupac, you know, smashing a bottle, and you're like, what's this bloke doing? And I see most of the public would look at him really funny, but it's so ingrained in that kid that that's just normal behavior. And he doesn't think, oh, you know, if I smash this bottle, everyone's going to look at me. And he's just smashing the bottle or punches a window as an example.
That's right.
And that destructive behavior is just so built into the individual that they don't see it as a bad thing until someone says, I'm calling the police, and they're like, oh, I better get out of here. And they don't look at it as a bad thing. They're like, oh, I'm going to get caught. So it's more related to their own enabling justification behavior. And I think once I was able to look at it and say, hey, this, you know, what you're doing isn't acceptable and it isn't right, and it's having a huge impact on the community, on individuals in the community, but also to myself on a mental health level. And everyone around me, my family, you know, my mother was, I was in jail when my mother passed away, unfortunately. And I got to see her like on the back end of before she had passed away. Yeah. I was lucky that I was on works release at the time. They let me go and see mum. But in general, I think that snapped me out of it and started to really build my conscience even more and realize that, hey, you know.
Because you were never an addict. You never did it for the shot. You weren't looking for the gear. You weren't. That's one thing that I guess always blew me away about you is while everybody else was running around putting needles in their arms and on the nod and chasing the high, that wasn't you. You never went down that road, bro.
I think seeing our community, and as I said, I started at a really young age making decisions, trying to survive. You've got to understand this. I slept on a floor, in a house with 13 people, and if you didn't get in quick enough, you would sleep on a little mattress, foam mattress. And when I say sleep on, my head would sleep on it and the rest would be on a line full of cockroaches and rats. And that's not, look, I don't knock my own upbringing. I'm just giving context to people to understand that when I came home too for dinner, if I came home a little bit late, I missed out on dinner. There wasn't enough food. We didn't have enough money. So you got to understand, one of the first things I did for food, and then found some money. And out of that, I went, hey, this could be a way I could get more money.
Yeah, exactly.
And feed myself and survive. And
yep.
I think being that young, it implanted something to me, like anyone, if you keep healthy and you keep, if your parents take you to football every weekend, you enjoy football. You enjoy netball, as an example. Yes. For me, I end up finding a way I could survive and eat and then started to pay for hotels that I could stay in.
Yeah.
So it was pure survival for me. I was living on the streets, sleeping under bridges, and eating, hoping that I got money to eat and doing things so I could actually eat food. And not, that was the first mentality around it all. And I think that was I was so young that implanted something in my head that justified everything that I did as a way of survival. And over time then, obviously the holidays came and whatever else, but in general, a lot of it was just pure survival, and I didn't know how to head down the other path.
No.
I didn't have...
No guidance, no role models, no one there to actually pick you up and say, Jeff, let's go. Let's walk this path together.
And I think that's where, I look back, and it's, I accept and I take full responsibility and ownership for every action that I've taken around the decisions I've made in my life, even though I was that young. And you got to look at, be serious about this. And anyone that watches this, go and have a look at a 12-year-old or 13-year-old niece or nephew of yours and think about yourself making decisions that I've spoken about at that age. It's insane.
Yeah.
I look at these young kids and I think, how did someone not grab me and really have a good talk to myself, a stern talk about how to better yourself, how to, have a great role model. Hey, I'm going to take you into... under my wing, I suppose, and might even live at mine and show you a better way. I was lucky at different points in my life. Charlie Perkins is one example. To be surrounded by people like Charlie who impacted me in a positive way, and learning from him and being around him, and it was allowing me to then take up and sponge how I spoke to people, how I interacted with people. And that ultimately allowed me to grasp, as I said, started to see, hey, I can source out people of inspiration, education, that could point me in a different direction. And I think because no one actually grabbed me myself, this is where I come to the government on this level, if we have someone like myself come in, even if it's just one kid and say, hey, I'm going to work with you and you only, and someone like yourself with another kid, and you actually pay
like a big brother mentor sort of thing.
Yeah, to help them in the right direction. So they want to start a business around cars because they're in the car field, right? Sure. As an example, but they like to do something in cars. Let's put them in the field that they're passionate about, but let's educate them how to do it the right way. And you have someone who would absolutely tick boxes around everything that you are trying to achieve with these kids by not putting them into a position where
they don't want to be.
They don't want to. A lot of them are doing it for survival. And then from the survival comes the status. And from the status, that then needs to continue and continue to be something that they'll do for the rest of their life until someone grasps them and says, hey, here's how you change yourself. And be able to move on from that point in time. Until we do it and we have actions around that journey, we're never going to change these young kids until they're so old powerful. Enough to get out of it. And the yep. thing about people might say, yeah, they're committing crime and doing whatever else, just lock them away. I guarantee you, if you put me in a place where I could thrive as a young kid, I had great athletic ability. My father taught me a lot. I unfortunately saw it as his discipline being too harsh, so I ran away. But if I was able to be mentored in a way to show me how to utilize the value and benefits that I could have to the community and also impact my own mental health and happiness and success on the way, we would have had a young kid who was very successful from a very young age. And the contract that the chances that I had with the South Sydney Rabbitohs as an example in the NRL would have continued on. But having the environment over here versus being at South, too totally. So when I did a South training, same, I was having these people that were there.
It's funny, I was the same at Western Suburbs, bro. I had the SG ball, the jersey flags, and I was there, you know. But I was the street kid that was pretending that he had a family and a house around him going to training. But when push come to shove, I was still doing what I was doing to survive every day to feed myself. And this is the whole thing, you know. You make a very valid point, and if I can just touch on it, is in life we should focus on our strengths. And we always hear this. Now, what difference you could make, and you made such a powerful point, is yes, okay, the young person today might be committing crimes, but he might be a great car thief. He could be a great locksmith for breaking enters. He might be a great verbaler that's able to, you know, fraudulently take money, whatever. But there, right there, is showing us that these people have intelligence, they have passion, they have drive. Let's embrace, like you said, grab a car yard, get a car, a ship box, and let him build it up to something. You know, try and help him step it forward. I've just been working for 4.5 years with a program called the Rise Program. I found out yesterday, Jeff, that they've cut the funding. Now, that's 15-year-old young men, 12 of them on a 10 to 12-week program that has helped many that is no longer there. Yeah. What are they going to do? There is nothing.
Being able to identify, what's currently in place isn't working, and the numbers in the system are going up, and new jails are being built. And the only thing I ever learned from jails, and as much as people would go, you got an education from jail. What if I got the education outside? And what if I had a role model earlier? And what if I had, you know, these are questions I ask myself. And I think I just did a program down on a healing farm. I won't say what. State or territory, but in general, that healing farm has huge potential to be able to teach people discipline, structure, getting up early in the morning, work ethic, etc., respect, love, care for one another, and then teaching them good values, morals, and beliefs. And I think you've got to understand what's taught to me, or what was taught to me, in the environment of Ellis Street, Redfern. And remember this, you got to think about police would pull us over and do things that people probably wouldn't even believe if I put it on here. But
open about it, because that's what the clink's about. And these are facts that, you know, there was young children flogged and abused and you know.
Absolutely. And that was just normal behaviour. So we then got into a mindset where the government or those that were there to protect us weren't the protectors but the perpetrators. And all of a sudden you had resistance against any sort of help that you actually sent out. I think if you had a police force that would grab a young kid outside of them being charged because they've done something wrong and said, hey, Jeff, sit down and let's have a comment. How could we help you? I probably would have had a conversation at a young age and said, mate, you know, I just don't have role models. I went to football training as an example as a young kid, a lot of times without food and going home knowing that I was going to miss out on my meals. You got to think about that as an individual, and then going, you know, trying to go to school and concentrate without food from the night before. I put it to anybody to go to work without any food and tell me how you feel by the end of the day. And
they won't do it. You can't. People can't do it without a coffee.
People won't do it without a coffee.
That's right. Let alone a proper nutritious meal.
I don't use any of this as an excuse, but I want people to have context. To understand that sometimes we judge a kid who is simply crying out, and most of the time it's done for survival. And when I say survival, food or roof over their head, until they become or build a status where they then feel that they need to portray and protect that image for a long period of time. And that was, I suppose, for me, a mixture of those three things. And so I went, you know what, I'm ready to build a whole new image, and I accept the past of being the past. What was the lessons I learned that could be better in the future? I sponged all those up and took them across to more positive outcomes for the rest of my life. And if I can do it, anyone can do that. But I think we can stop me going into custody, or a younger version of me going into custody for 15 plus years, by giving them the right support networks. Even if that, as I said, if it was one person that had honestly changed their life, similar to myself, that could then impact those kids. And I think if you have funding around that type of thing, you'd have a huge... Mate, I worked with a group the other day, and they told me this young kid was, he won't change. And I said, all right, not a problem. I don't listen to people. I then went in, did the workshop with this kid, and that organisation wrote me an email and said, mate, this kid's already writing goals. He's gone home. He's done everything we've told him to do, and he can't wait till next week. And I think that's because one person showed some form of care towards that kid around what was important to him. Because what I do in these workshops is find out what's important to yourself, what's your happiness, what's your gratitude, what's your success, what's your quality of life look like, what are 10 things you've always wanted to do, just as the first building block of these workshops. And the reason why I do that, that then gives you value behind who you are. Then we look at what are your values, morals, and beliefs that are set here. And people in general, they're going to be a product of their environment. You surround yourself, and I'll take you to the real world of normal living. And you surround yourself with people who are negative in your workplace, or you've been in a toxic workplace, you know exactly what I'm talking about, stress and heartache and trauma that comes from that workplace because of the environment they're in. The same principle around these young kids who are making constant choices around what they know best, and until we show them better and someone moves out of that workplace and says, I'm going to change jobs because this is doing my head in, as an example, and they move into this new place, then they free themselves of this stress and trauma. And most of the times it's because we haven't paused, slow it down to speed it up, meaning writing out what's important to yourself, what are your set values, morals, and beliefs, and then how do I restructure and rewire what's in here to allow me to live a better quality of life and more happiness in my life around whatever success looks like for the individual. And this is for me something that I'm passionate about, and I do want to get into at some point in time once obviously, I feel I'm at a level with my own business where I can go in and help these young kids see a better way to life.
Jeff, you're very successful in what you are doing. And I know you're a humble man, so I don't expect you to sit there and go, yes, I am. But you are. You've achieved some unbelievably amazing things. And, you know, you are still respected and looked up to. And as you were when you were growing up as that kid from Everly Street, Redfern, who was the best at what he did, which is on the other side of it, you still have carried that persona, and people still look at you and are just idolizing and are inspired by you. Who are you today? Because I think it's important to let the people know who the man is that's just explained himself and his upbringing. Who is he today? Let's tell him.
Yeah, I think the...
Don't be too humble about it. I want you to talk yourself up. You deserve it, brother.
I was a trainer who then became a nutritionist. And, yeah, the training side of things, that was something I was passionate about. I always kept myself healthy, seeing the health issues within our community. You know, there was young kids as young as 10, and we still have this issue more so around suicides within the Aboriginal community, 10-year-old, 12-year-old, 14-year-old kids committing suicide. Think about that. Like, really look at your niece and nephew and think about, why is this happening to a fellow Australians? And we as Australians are letting these kids down. In the end, you know, this is someone's kid. This is someone's community that these kids are failing from. And I think I became a personal trainer because I was always in the fitness, being locked up quite often. You trained. It was a way to take your mind away from jail and obviously release some endorphins and feel good about yourself in a position where there was not much to feel good about, I suppose. And that transition into me being a trainer, I was a trainer for a long period of time, every time I was home and not home. I then became a nutritionist through that Deakin University study, and I now am a health and wellbeing consultant that travels around the country, has clients all around the world and in Australia. I work with brands, organisations, companies, schools, changing mindsets, delivering health and wellbeing programs, schools programs, healthy choices, better choices programs, to allow people just to get the most out of their life based around what's important to them. We use three pillars: success, quality of life, and happiness. The most important one: what is your happiness? What does it look like? And I ask anybody out there that watches this podcast, have you ever written down what makes you happy? Because we all think we know what it is, right? And I ask people to write it down, and it blows me away because I sit there, I see them sitting there and they're literally thinking about what actually makes them happy.
I just did it then. I got a pen in my hand and I'm listening to every word you said, and I looked down and I thought, what? And I should instantly know.
Absolutely. It blows you away because most people don't. And I think that that time in solitary confinement for me really used brain cells I'd never used before, I believe, because I went really deep within myself. And then I started to look at what actually makes you happy and why can't you be as successful as you are in this world? In this world, you've got a great work ethic, and I started to look at what I did have, you know, and what skill sets could I take across and really make the most out of my life for the rest of my life. And once I did that, I realized that, hey, you know, you can still be and have that status image if that's what you so
desire.
For me, it wasn't. Look, I think that was a valuable lesson to me. My actions created that persona, status, whatever it may be. And I think the same principle now, which helps me quite a lot with my business. I just love what I do, and when you find what you love doing, unfortunately, I found that at a young age was the wrong thing. But as I got older, finding what I love doing, brands, organizations, companies love having me come in and change the mindset of the individual. And once you do that, you bring out the best of the individual. You think of it like this, and this is how we work in general. Any individual, whether it's a school kid, through to corporate, Aboriginal communities, you're not going to get the best out of an individual. And if this was a car and the spark plug wasn't running properly, meaning something going on in their life, then they got a flat tire, then something with the engine was playing up, there wasn't coolant, as an example, you got to think about how that car would actually run. And more than likely, it might run, but it won't run effectively. And what we do is we go in and we touch base with each individual, what's important to them, what's your happiness look like, what's your success look like, what's your quality of life. Success for someone might be $1 million house versus the next person being able to sit on the beach with their dog every day and read a book, you know, earning just enough to get by and survive. And but people don't pause for that moment and actually write that down. And once you do that, you have a vision, purpose, and why around what's important in your life, and then you have total clarity around the direction you're having headed. And I always say this to people as well: if me and you get in a race from Sydney to Perth, and GPSs have just come out, and I've got a GPS, and you've got to guess your way there, we know who's going to win because I have that clarity around exactly what's important to me, A to B. And when you're ticking your boxes off around your own happiness, success, and quality of life on a daily basis, you wake up with that mentality I've spoken about before, where you walk out and say, I'm grateful to be alive. You're doing everything that's important to you based around your own happiness. You're not working, and I guarantee you're going to just follow that passion with that same work ethic that you had in this wrong direction, but then put it in, putting it in the right direction, whether you chose that life or whether you grew up in it in a normal life. And you'll be very successful at what you do. And remember, your success will be determined by yourself, because whether it's that $1 million house or that, you know, little shack down by the beach reading the book, you're successful. And if you've done all these things that you've written down, you can constantly upgrade those and say, hey, I've ticked off all these boxes. Here's some new goals and dreams that I do have, and here's how I'm going to take the steps to do that. Learning over 15 years how to be better in life, I now appreciate every single breath and second that I live on this planet.
I'm absolutely mesmerized. I'm sitting here just watching you. We're on a Zoom at the moment. I'm in studio. You're in your wonderful abode in Sydney. I can't help but sit here and say that I'm captivated. I really am. Just I've taken in everything you've said so far in this interview, and I'm almost want to thank you. Like this is something like left field, completely different to anything I've ever done. I've followed your journey. I knew who you were growing up. We've crossed paths. And I've never had that opportunity to sit down with Jeff Morgan today and completely be just impacted by your words. I am right now, without any carry-on, I'm absolutely so grateful to have just had these moments with you and whatever we get to share here, because I'll tell you now, I'm going to walk away with a lot of what you've just said and implement in my life starting straight away. I relate to what you're saying. You know, I just when you're talking about that grey day, I was sitting at the beach yesterday, I was doing a story on my interview, and I looked down and went, oh, it's a bit of a miserable day out here. And, you know, people are inspired by what I'm talking about and do, because with my page, it's very honest, very direct, about mental health, my own lived experience. So therefore, right there, I've just realised that I could have a lot of weight carried into other lives by my actions and words. Mm-hmm. Now, absolutely. If my language is different, I can have such a greater and more positive impact into somebody's life through my own language. And sometimes you just need a smack in the mouth, and I reckon you just did that. I want to say thank you. Like, we haven't even finished this yarn yet, and I can tell you right now, mate, I'm really grateful. And I mate, think that if people – is there a way that you can be contacted?
They can contact – anyone could jump on the website, www.jeffreymorgan.com.au. And we do everything. We became very diverse because of obviously the upbringing, whether it's health and wellbeing programs, schools programs, community projects, health and wellbeing programs, mindset programs, kids at risk, meaning kids that have come in contact with kids. And understand, anyone that's watching this isn't just about changing life from being making bad choices into a world of good choices. This is a absolute mindset. Whether you've grown up absolutely without any crime in your life, or you know, around that upbringing as such, to be able to get the most out of your life as an individual, a lot of times what we tell ourselves is what's been implanted during our formative years from your parents or someone who has value to yourself, your parents, your brothers, your sisters, uncles, aunties, maybe your community as the example. And if that's been negatives, self-limiting behaviors, thoughts and beliefs are going to be in what we call your invisible backpack. And until you take that out, drop that down on paper and then write out a solution to that, and as I said, you don't have to have committed crime. You could be implanted with these in the real world, and we see this all the time.
Can I just say, Jeff, too, and I don't mean to cut in, but I love the metaphor, I think, is the word that you used about the backpack. Is that right in using that? Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Russell Manser, another fantastic man who's doing great things with an organisation called The Voice of a Survivor. He's been on the clink, and mate, he was a young man that had been absolutely just pulled to pieces, raped. He was a heroin addict, a bank robber. He once said to me, I did not realise how good it felt until I took the backpack off of the weight that I was carrying that wasn't mine, and I put that backpack down and I walked away from it. You've just used that again, and I've used it after Russell as well. What a very powerful way of putting things in perspective, because we carry that backpack, and it's heavy, man. It's heavy, and until you just put it down and walk away from it, you don't know how light you can feel.
Absolutely, like And hopefully Russell stole that from me. he's a champion.
He's a beautiful man. Beautiful man.
But it's so true, right? And I'm going to talk about just everyday people who've grown up absolutely normal, working life, etc., but have these self-limiting behaviors and thoughts and beliefs that are tucked into your invisible backpack. And each time something happens, you know, maybe something's happened in your family that then gets added to this backpack, something that you've been told by a boyfriend, a boss, as an example, gets put in here. Maybe you were bullied at school. Maybe something happened to you that caused you major trauma. Now, you think about if each one of those are a 5 kilo weight, imagine what you're carrying around every single day when you're not dealing with that. And what we do is we grasp that and say, you know what? We're going to find the best solution moving forward for this individual, because I no longer want to walk around with this backpack full of weights. And once you do that, whether it's at an organizational level, and I'll give the example there, what we do is we get the best out of the individual. And if that car, remember, that was missing these three parts, is one example, then starts to function at its best, and every single worker is doing that, you're going to have a productive and proactive workplace that ticks off all the boxes you want around the values of your organization. And the same principle, whether it's a school or a community. But until we identify that and we start to, you know, put systems in place to allow them to fix things in their organization, school, community, we're never going to see change. And I think that's the most important things on the opposite side of the scale, where these young kids, until we sit down with them and say, why is it going on? You don't have a role model. How do we fix that? And then give them every single step and every reason not to bring an excuse to the table. We then put the ownership back onto the individual, whether that's on that side or that side, good or bad, to make sure that they're accountable and responsible to every single word that comes out of their mouth. And when you do that, you then empower the individual to take ownership of them. And once they do one good thing about anything in their life, it's like anything, right? You get your hair done as a female, and I'll give that as the example. They feel amazing. They get their nails done. They feel even better. They buy a new dress. They feel even better. And it's the same principle around business or school projects.
Yep.
Once you add layers upon layers upon layers, this individual's thriving. They're loving it. You know, they're wearing this beautiful dress. They've got their hair done, their nails done. They're going out tonight. They're meeting this new date. And you're going to rock into that date with absolute confidence. And the same principle applies to these young kids getting in trouble, schools, organizations, or communities. You're going to have people who are proactive and productive with a absolute abundance of confidence that become contributing members to our community. And I think that's one of the biggest ways we can change Australia in the future to be a more positive, supportive nation, because in the end, we all live in, they all got to come home at one point. And if we keep locking them away, they'll only become more savage. And yeah, that then ends up in trauma, stress, or trouble for a family, a community, that could be prevented by helping someone else from our community.
You've also too had a little bit of a stint on TV hosting a show.
2 years after coming home, and this is a good little example to yourself, 2 years after a seven-year sentence, I was home and I was offered a TV show around exactly what I love doing, my passion of being a health and wellbeing expert and allowing, you know, there was segments on that show all around that nature, whether it was training, nutrition, healthy habits and rituals that people could put into their own life. And I think that's a little something that hopefully inspires someone to believe. And I've got some major projects coming up, which I can't mention at the moment, but stay tuned and remember the name and you'll be able to look back on it and say, hey, wow. In saying that, understand if I can do that with all the adversity that's been in the background and all of the reasons why I shouldn't have made it, then anybody that watches this podcast, whether you made bad decisions growing up and grew up in a community where, you know, you became a byproduct of that environment, or you just grew up normally and you don't believe in yourself because of, you know, what your school teacher, your partner, your husband, wife has told you in the past, you can do it if I can do it. And it only took me 2 years to get that TV show through exactly what you spoke about before, action. You can speak, a lot of people speak of convenience. And what I mean by that is, let's say we're at a party, I bump into yourself and there's a group there. I then say something because it sounds great in the environment, but I want to lose weight as I'm going to join the gym next week. So I'm like,
you and your weight thing. I think we should stop talking about weight. You're a man that's ripped from head to toe with about 2% body fat. I love the fact that you're helping people weight. Look, just use another flipping example, will you, Jeff? I'm a big bloke that needs to lose weight. It's making me subconsciously thinking I've got a problem.
And like,
will you sponsor me? Will you be my sponsor and get me through that?
I'll help you at any time. And
oh, God, love you.
By all means, reach out. But in general, let's say they wanted to start a business, and I'm saying, what are you passionate about? So we had the conversation, and I say, why don't you register the business right now? And they're like, hey. And I'm like, no, serious. Like, just do it. I go, do it right now. I'll sit with you and we'll do it. Do you know what? Do you have a name? Or let's think of a couple of names. And what I want you to do is send it to 10 different friends and tell them, they pick from 1 to 3 what's the best name out of the 3 names that you came up with. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be your business name. Are you in? And they're like, are you joking? I'm like, no, let's not have a conversation. I think party conversations or, you know, get together conversations. Mm-hmm. A lot of the time is just for convenience and small chitter to that.
Absolutely.
Let's take action right here, right now. Create 3 names, send them to your 10 best friends. And the amount of people I've done that to blows people away and putting people on the spot. But in the end, making them tackle maybe a fear that they had, some self-limiting, you know, thoughts. They've always wanted to do it, but they just don't feel that they're going to succeed. You got to understand, moving out of that world being ultra successful for me and going into this world of being making better choices in my life, I had to accept that I had to start from down here.
Yes.
With absolutely nothing. But if I worked and had the same work ethic as I did over here and I applied myself to my vision, purpose and why with total clarity around every step that I needed to take, I was going to get there, and 2 years later, I ended up with that TV show. And now I've worked with some on some major projects over the years that would blow people. I went back to my primary school as an example, which became the National Centre of Indigenous Excellence, and signed a massive contract to give them an idea of business structure. And I think that, like, I was literally signing that contract, looking up at my schoolroom, and the amount of money that I was signing for that contract. Look back on it and I think, you know, if I can achieve something of that nature and so many other things in my life, then so can anybody else in this world, as long as you apply yourself to what you're, the direction you're heading, and understand that you need to get comfortable with being uncomfortable, meaning you're going to have a lot of roadblocks, obstacles, family, friends tell you that you can't achieve stuff. And even when I came home from Melbourne, my wife at the time said, mate, there's a lot of personal trainers out there. You'll never be successful. And all that did was throw massive fuel on my fire, which was right here. And I went out within 3 months and I was really successful, fully booked out. And that continued pretty much over about a 7-year period until my brother committed suicide. And at that point in time, I felt like I was extended as far as I possibly could as a personal trainer. Now, if you apply the same principle about what you're passionate about, why can't you do exactly what I did and achieve everything that you want to in your life? And you deserve that. Every person on this planet deserves the happiness that they want.
Do you think, Jeff, too, and I mean, hearing your story today is so very powerful, and I really hope that our listeners here have that same connection and truly take some part of your journey and your experience and your wonderful knowledge away with them, because I think it's invaluable. But I can't help but think at different points in your life, and this is just me, I believe in things happen for a reason, and, you know, like, I understand people have different thoughts and perspectives, but, you know, you're a man who's a product of your environment, which is one of the most craziest eras, I believe, in Australian history, truly, to grow up in Everleigh Street, Redfern. And God bless them all. There are so many that never made it through.
Absolutely.
You know, and that was purely because of their environment. You are the one percenter, you know, basically, that's been able to do that. But at each stage of your journey, you talk about something or somebody that's come into your life that's made a difference. You even going back to your primary school at Redfern and talking and looking up, and there's little Jeff up there, the kid with nothing, struggling to eat each week. You know what I mean? And here you are as Jeff Morgan, Jeffrey Morgan, the proud Indigenous man sitting down, signing that contract. I mean, did that not at all emotionally hit you inside? To me, I'm feeling emotional hearing that. And it's almost a very spiritual thing, because I feel that you've been carried on a journey with different guiders along the way that have allowed you to give you a bit of a direction in the path that you need to head. You know, if I can put it this way, it's almost like maybe some of your angels and ancestors and you know, are on your shoulder, helping you be this amazing, greater human in this world that we live in.
I unfortunately lost both parents when I was in that world, and meant that they never see me on
the success
with the TV show. They never see me change my life. And I think the moments of clarity when I sat there and really thought about the change that I wanted, and how I could impact the community, Australia, in a positive way, and the skill set that I had, the right people saw that. And when I say that, I went to a mind, body, and spirit festival with my partner at the time, and she's like, "Get this photo. There's this photo, and it gets your aura and whatever, you know."
Yeah.
All right, I stand here, and when I took the photo, the lady was, or not just one lady, numerous ladies that were there, not tarot card readers, mediums.
Yep.
Like, wow, very powerful. Do you understand what this is? And I was like, what's going on? Like, everyone's freaking out. I said, go around this. They had this big wall full of photos. And I said, show me one picture that looks the same, the colouring. And we went around, and I was the only person that had this really blue aura around myself. And I said, mate, you've got a lot of people looking over yourself, guiding you and pushing you in the right direction. Now, I think my life's been very, I've been very fortunate now. But I'm also a big believer in you create your own journey as well.
Sure.
And being, doing and creating and ticking off boxes of action creates a reaction from other people to say, hey, you know, I want to work with Jeff. I want to be a part of this man's vision and purpose or passion. And I think on the back end of that, I've had people just come into my life through the guidance I've had traveling back from Walgett, actually, from a bunch of community projects. We were traveling across to Moree, and I swerved around a rock. Then I just had I don't know why, I put the brakes on and I reversed back and went around the rock, jumped out, and it was an actual owl on the ground. And to me, that was very spiritual. The next night, the same thing happened exactly again, but we were up at the Gold Coast by that point in time, up the back, looking at a waterfall. I think for that to happen twice, and some other stuff around, my brother with kookaburras, my dad with crows, has blown me away. And
so you really are a spiritual man. You do believe.
I'll be honest with you. Obviously, growing up how I did, I was like, what a load of crap, to be honest with yourself. Yeah. I just think there's too much in the background, not from the actions. And those that have been with me have said, mate, I've never seen that. Another example, my brother had passed away, and a kookaburra constantly was present over the next month or so. And I think to the point where the bridge that I drove across, Iron Cove Bridge in Des Moines, then put a big kookaburra painting on the side of a massive set of flats. And I think I was just blown away by that. I seen a kookaburra during that period in George Street in the city on a light pole.
Like it's not the place.
It just doesn't really or rarely happen. And I think I've had some guidance around that. Aboriginal people are very spiritual people. And, you know, I do, as I said, growing up that way, you're like, what a load of crap. But I think you have to then look at some stuff and go, mate, this is crazy. My dad passing away whilst I was in custody, I was asleep. A crow was out the front of the cell block. And it just went and constant. It was going whack, whack all morning for a period of time. I jumped up, opened the window, looked at it. Then it looked at me, started gawking away, and then giving me one big sort of, and then just flew off. And I was like, well, who are you trying to tell me? And next morning when we came out, they called me to the office and said, hey, your father had passed away earlier this morning. And yeah, that type of stuff, just there's too much coincidence for it to be something that I believe is just a coincidence. So I think there's more to it. But I think the choices I'm making as well are always constantly put me in the right position with the right guidance behind myself.
Jeff, what's the future got for you, brother? What's up there? What do you see?
I think a lot of it's, I've always had a vision to have a Geoffrey Morgan Academy or a foundation, probably either, to inspire others to believe and achieve anything that they want to in their life. I had a brother and sister now that have, that have passed away, unfortunately, from suicide. Yep. And that's something I'm very passionate about. Not just suicide, I mean just helping people in general. And I think to have 10-year-old, 12-year-old, 14-year-old kids committing suicide, the mental health issues related to social media, the expectations now, like you look at what you spoke about before where people had an expectation of Geoffrey Morgan. Now these young kids have an expectation to wear particular clothes, dance a particular way, act a particular way. Otherwise, they don't fit in. And that's huge, you know. Social media gives you this level of expectation. And if you don't hit it, you fail. It's crazy when it should be more about your own happiness and what's important to yourself. And as I said, by writing that down, you don't then have to become a Kardashian as an example. Nothing against them. Great success and well done to them. But in general, what I mean by that is you don't have to live in somebody else's expectation. And I think that was one of the things that helped me be very successful. I only did what I did for my own survival. And over a period of time, I wasn't doing it to impress anybody. But those actions that I was constantly taking were then having a positive impact on others. I shouldn't say positive, having an impact on others through the actions I took rather than saying, hey, I'm going to make a lot of money. My thing was, let's just take some action. And by doing so, I made a lot of money and then it had an impact on other people and said, hey, and let's do what he's doing, or et cetera, et cetera. And the same principle applies on the business scale. And now that I've transitioned over, the actions that I've taken have allowed me to do that. And I think once you start to live in your own happiness, your own success and own quality of life, you're going to find everything that you want for the rest of your life and you'll never live in regret. Stop living in other people's expectations because you're never going to please everybody. I have a positive nature and energy, and as I said, everything I think about, even a negative, I've just recently had an auntie pass away this week who was like a mother to me. And I look at three positives out of every what's perceived as a negative. Yep. And I change the language, change the outcome. Instead of a mistake, it's a lesson. So what was the three things from my auntie? And for me, she was said, hey, you need to take ownership and responsibility of you, mate. It's time. I got to an age where, you know, I was a byproduct of my environment. She's like, that's bullshit, son. You've got to stand up and be who you are.
Yeah.
And until you do that, you're never going to change. You got to go in and say, hey, I can't keep making these decisions and blaming this here because you're old enough and mature enough to start to do that. The biggest thing and the time that it took to transition was the habit and ritual that was instilled in myself. It took time to change. It was like, you know, I want to lose weight. Sorry to bring it up again.
You're purposely doing this, aren't you? This whole way you're talking about language and processing and you're feeding my mind with that word. Wait. So you know I'm gonna walk away going, right, Morgs has put it in my head now. This is what I have to do. I love you, brother. I love you the best.
Until you look at how you can process and change that, you'll never change it. And the more that we start to look at ourselves, you know, in a different light as an example, and going back to my auntie, what she taught me was great ownership and accountability. And the second thing was she taught me a valuable lesson. Always tell people that they need to hear rather than what they want to hear, even my friends. And those that don't tell me that in the nicest way, I limit my time around those people. And the last thing she taught me was to value time on this planet. It's very short. And make it special, live it in everything that you want to do in your life. And if I say, you know, the Kardashians are doing that, so I'm going to go and buy myself a Rolls Royce now as well, but not get there, then my life's a failure. And I'm constantly down and depressed every time I wake up and I don't have the Rolls Royce in my driveway, because I'm living trying to tick off a box around being a Kardashian as well myself, when I could be, you know, what makes me happy could be that little shack on the beach reading your book while your dog's playing with the ball out the front of the house near the beach. And
what a beautiful lady. God bless her.
You spoke about it. I implanted what she taught me to make sure that it reinforced in general, everything that you do then creates a neurological response to something that happens in your life. So you touch a stove as an example, bang, it burns. You know in the future, don't touch that stove because it's going to burn your hand again. Light goes green means go forward. Red means stop. And life's very similar, you know. Things in your head around the life that you've been brought up and taught into, whether it's criminal behavior or a normal life, is a green light. Let's go do something. All right, we've got the green light because we've done the right things along these processes, versus somebody saying, hey, you know, I want to start a business, I've registered it now, and you're starting to get all these green lights for yourself as well. Once you then take away everything that and start to look at building these massive neurological highways filled with an abundance of positivity and green light responses that have a good impact on your mental health and happiness and success and quality of life, I promise you that your life is going to go to a whole new level. And as I said, you'll wake up in the morning and you won't see a grey cloud. You won't talk about how dreary the day is. You'll always wake up and you'll change your language, and it will become so part of your DNA and software that you'll naturally speak like that. And people say, you're always positive. It's because I've now instilled that in myself so that my neurological highways up here are set in a particular way that when I get to that set of lights, it's just green, green, and green to it.
Jeff, I want to say a massive, massive thank you, mate. Your story of redemption is one of the best. I ask all my guests before they leave, though, if you could leave one inspiring passage, verse, a word, something that's resonated with you that could possibly change the moment of someone's life. What's that for Jeffrey Morgan?
Wow.
I've listened to your chat now for over an hour. I got him.
I think I've used one for a long time because it related more to myself, but I heard one recently from my auntie's passing. Someone had posted that in the comments, and I think both of those are very powerful. But for me, mine was, excuses are the nails that built the house of failure. Meaning, like, as long as you say but to something, you're already enabling bad behavior, whether it's eating the wrong food or committing a crime. Once you accept that you can let go of the ego, because the ego is your ID, and then start to head in a different direction, then you drop your excuses and you take full ownership of every action that you've taken. Understand that, you know, I put a bit of a disclaimer, but understand that some kids are just too young to understand. A 10, 12-year-old kid is way too young to be able to make. And I say this to people. Do they drive cars at 10 or 12 years old? They don't, unless they're stolen, obviously. So how is it that we then judge them and are able to then put them into a boys' home or girls' home, as an example, a detention center, because of their actions? Well, like, those kids don't have the neurological wiring to understand probably what they've even done. And until we then grasp them at that young age and really sit down and help them in a different direction, we'll never be able to help them change. But once you're at a point of maturity, you then should start to take the actions and understand that it's not going to happen in 2 seconds. You are going to have obstacles, roadblocks, what you perceive as failures, but don't look at them as failures. What was the lesson that you can take away? Find the three positives out of the lesson and be better or a better person in the future.
Jeff, thank you. Thank you so much, mate. Your time, your words, your sharing of your own journey. I think everybody out there will be able to truly resonate with a lot of your story and really take something out of it that will hopefully change many of your lives. This has been a really wonderful chat and one with somebody who I have a lot of respect for. Guys, Jeff's left his information there. If he can help you in any way, feel free. And I will ask you one more time, Jeff, can you please give our listeners your contact details, because I think it's extremely important that it's available for them to contact you to reach out.
Yeah. Anyone can contact me through www.jeffreymorgan, J-E-F-F-R-E-Y, Morgan, M-O-R-G-A-N, .com.au.
Thanks for joining the Clink Stories of Redemption. Jeffrey Morgan, we will be back next week with another wonderful story. Thank you for your time.
For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable. That's right. For the record, you ain't trying to grow, then it's done for you. That's right. For the record, lab on me going all the way. For the record, ain't trying to link, no time to waste. Stop calling. For the record, 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 for the record.
Want to thank a new sponsor who's just come on board, Dr. Pickle's Tattoo Aftercare and Lifestyle Products. They're made in Brisbane and are known right around the world. They have this amazing balm. It's called the Original Tattoo Balm. You seal and protect your tattoo with the OG. I've just been using it on my leg after I had it done, and I tell you now, my skin feels amazing and there's a great shine to it. They also have an antiseptic spray you can spray on and wipe over your tattoo to keep it nice and clean so you don't get any infections. They've got a 3-in-1 wash. It's all natural, smells great, packed full of peppermint, citrus, and wait for it, hemp oils. How good's that? Plus, they have a SPF 50 sunscreen, which acts as a moisturizer as well as protecting your tattoos from fading and stop them from getting sun damage. Right now, though, for the Clink listeners, they're offering 15% off with the code CLINK. Just head to drpickles.com. That's drpickles.com.